Chapter 24. Gavin dreamed after the storm, but knew that this was no dream. It was memory. For a brief moment he fought. No, not this. Orholam, have mercy on me, not. It was his first Sunday as Prism. He was in his own apartments atop what was now his tower. It was just after noon, and the dawn and noon rituals were finished. Now he had only to murder 400 drafters. There was a knock at his door, and his mother came in. Gavin had barely had time to get home, grab a quick meal, and bathe. His room slave, Sharla, a woman his mother's age, whom his mother had appointed in place of the original Gavin's room slave, apparently trying to keep her second son celibate for the rest of his days, had shaved his chest. And two of the High Luxiats, Daeron Utaxis, and Camellius Malagos had anointed his whole body with oil and myrrh. Having the sister of two men he'd betrayed lay hands on his naked body had not been an experience he was eager to repeat, for they'd anointed his entire body. And when choosing, who would you prefer to have oil your rod and stones? An old man or an old woman who had reason to hate you, though she might not know it? A Prism was not his own. A Prism belonged to the satrapy's entire, and to Orholam, and to his family, and to peace, and whatever scraps he could collect after all had taken their bites, he might enjoy for himself. His copper-coloured hair was bound back, and the High Luxiats placed a crown on his forehead with a single diamond the size of a robin's egg. He wore a ceremonial shirt of red silk and cloth of gold open down the front, with sleeves so short as to be vestigial. His trousers were red silk, so tight he thought they'd tear if he moved too quickly. But he was Orholam's hand on earth. It behooved him to look potent, virile, even sexual. Orholam was, after all, a creative force, a generative being. How much the creative and the reproductive overlapped swung back and forth between which High Luxiats held sway at any particular time. Creation was meant to reflect creator, they argued, as above, so below. That the worship guided by the Prism often turned into worship of the Prism seemed to bother no one, or no one in power. To Gavin's understanding of theology, that seemed a problem, but he was an impostor, and to protest too loudly might expose him. He did what he was told. Feliagile dismissed Sharla and a young, glowering blackguard named Ironfist. When they were gone, she said quietly, "My son, if you can make it through this, you will be Prism for 1,000 years. You've done magnificently all day, better than you did when you were younger." She meant he'd done better than the real Gavin had done. "I've killed more than 400 men before. It won't be a problem." The dreaming Gavin suddenly separated from the remembered boy. Had he really thought that? Or had he been trying to impress his mother? He had wanted so desperately not to fail her. She had been magnificent, and he had known some of what she must have risked to keep him alive. "These ones won't even be fighting back," he said, with a lopsided grin. Felia didn't smile. "Take off your shirt. I need to anoint you. I've been anointed. Not with this." She produced a small jar with a yellowish-orange paste or lotion in it. She began to rub it into his skin carefully, only touching the areas that wouldn't be covered by clothing, as if the paste were terribly precious. "What is it?" he demanded. She didn't answer the question, saying instead, "Gavin, I know so far you haven't taken your duties as the highest Luxiat seriously, but on this night, your leadership of the satrapies, your balancing for all the world, these are necessities but distant ones. This night is the one bloody pillar on which all your power rests. It matters not that only you and the Sworn One are in each room. When a Prism takes his duties lightly, or enjoys them, or gets blind drunk to brace himself for this burden, word always gets out. Those Prisms never last more than their 7, and many don't last that long. Sunday is the death of an entire community, of a whole convocation of peers. This is where our communal worship meets one intense and final personal experience of faith." "I wasn't intending to take it lightly, Mother. merely trying to break the tension." She ignored him. "You'll have only 2 minutes with each. We prefer to give each 5 minutes with you, but the sheer number of drafters who've burned themselves out in the war precludes that. We could have begun sooner." The High Magisterium and the Spectrum agreed that drawing out this freeing for days would only draw more attention to the war and all its wounds. They want us to move on. All the drafters understand. Most have already been shrived by the Lesser Luxiats. Some, however, fear that the Luxiats keep lists of their sins to use against their families in the future. That's strictly forbidden. Had he been that young, that naive? Strictly, but it happens. We root such out as quietly as we can, but with so many Luxiats coming from noble families, the temptation is often too great for them. They can't help but pass along some helpful tidbit. As I was saying, some of the shrived will keep their most serious sins to themselves to be revealed to the prism alone. You will find yourself in possession of many dark secrets. With your memory, it will be a potent tool. That is as it should be. But don't share those secrets with anyone, not your father, not me. He will pressure you to do so. The prism sharing such things with his own powerful family would undermine your power at 1,000 times the rate a mere Luxiat leaking such things would.
Of course, Gavin said.
He'd had a sudden insight, the kind that now he would not expect such a young man to have. Some die with sin on their souls, just to keep the prism from knowing, don't they? He'd been young, but not stupid. Doubtless. Prism-spreading oak was worthless, but Prism Irene Malagos, before him, had a way of showing mercy to such. She would, after shriving one who had been an enemy, ask if they had any silent sins for which they could together beseech Orholm's forgiveness. It's outside of orthodoxy, you understand, for to speak sins is to let them be exposed to the light, and is theologically necessary, but it was also very merciful. Such things get out, you know. She was well loved.
Sounds like a good idea.
Prism Malagos lasted 2 terms, but perhaps only because the Spectrum never had reason to fear her. She never advanced her family, nor any of the goals she held dear. She was a figurehead, nothing more. Consider carefully whether you want that fate.
He turned to look at the gentle woman who had so often tenderly nurtured him.
This steel. Was steel her natural state, just hidden? Or was it simply that she would do anything at all to protect her last living son?
I've given the satrapies ample reason to fear me, mother. A little love might not go amiss.
She bowed her head.
As you wish, father.
Ever the orange, Felia Garl knew exactly when to tinge that religious title with a playful smirk. This time she did not. She gave him the respect that he still, as a young man, craved from his own mother. The respect of tens of thousands of others was reinforced rather than hollowed, as only a mother could do. He certainly didn't get any respect from his father. She closed the jar. The lotion I've applied to you will be preserved until dawn by the other oils you were anointed with. It's a mix of tiny particles of imperfect yellow Luxin dust and superviolet. You can use a little superviolet to make your entire body glow, even in a darkened room. It makes quite a sight. Use it sparingly and don't get too close to the torches, or it will break down. It is incredibly difficult for the yellows to make, and it's a closely guarded secret. If you like, all the gold in your clothing can be lit as well. These are the last and holiest moments of a drafter's life. Make them special, Gavin.
No pressure. Trinkets and magic tricks? His mother took a deep breath.
I seem to remember Dazen awarding his army's highest honour to a commander after the Battle of Blood Ridge who routed the enemy with illusions that, were those enemies thinking rationally, wouldn't have deceived them for 2 heartbeats.
She waited, but he refused to give her the satisfaction of admitting she was right.
But at certain moments, 2 heartbeats is an eternity, she said, quoting him. I might suggest that at the moment you slide the knife home, you begin to glow
and shine brighter as the drafter dies, to give her a symbol of her eternal reward. But you are the prism, father.
She could be astonishingly cynical, his dear mother.
I'm a fraud, he whispered.
She slapped his face, fury breaking through a veneer so cool he hadn't even guessed it was there. Then, instantly, it was gone again. She rubbed the lotion back into place on his slap-stung cheek. Her voice was quiet, but each word was considered, knife-edged.
We are all of us frauds. We are all of us frauds, and we are all of us doing the best we can to hold up a tower of illusions and ill-placed hopes. Do not fail us, my beloved son.
The dream skipped forward then, through the long walk to the yard, through the cheers and praises and the prayers of another of the Hyloxiats, blessing him and his work. Choice foods and rare wines were laid out. In some cases, whole communities had made the pilgrimage to Little Jasper to say goodbye to a beloved drafter who had served particularly well, which this year meant drafters who'd been particularly heroic in the war. Though it was a feast, blackguards wandered the crowds, keeping their eyes on all the drafters who were nearly whites. Every few years there was an incident, and in the aftermath of bitter war, they were wise to be on edge. And then Gavin was ushered into a room, a long, thin dagger pressed into his hand. The closing of the heavy door shut out the cheers of the crowd utterly. He would move from room to room. The rooms were arranged in a circle at the base of his tower. Each room was tiny, with only a few simple decorations, a pitcher of wine and a smaller one of poppy liquor for the fearful, and a cushioned kneeler. Some drafters liked to pass the night in prayer vigils. Others relaxed and talked with family and friends in larger rooms or outside until the Luxiats summoned them. As Orholm's favoured, all the female drafters were seen first. The first one was a haggard drafter of perhaps 45. She knelt patiently on the kneeler at the front of the room. Her back was to the small door where the Luxiats would take her body, her face to Gavin as he entered.
"Greetings, my daughter. May all the blessings of the light be on you," Gavin said.
The woman made no reply, merely stared at Gavin. Gavin moved forward, taking the seat in front of the kneeling woman.
"I've come to shrive you."
No reply. Usually the Luxiat who spoke to Gavin between rooms was supposed to tell him if there were any special circumstances, a mute, or a drafter who might be violent, whatever. The Luxiats had said nothing other than the woman's name.
"Do you have a confession, Vel Parsham?" Gavin asked uncomfortably.
"This," the woman said, "this is wrong. This is not what Orholm wills. This is a travesty. This screams to me of men and women holding on to power by their fingertips, by making someone else pay."
"It's normal to be afraid," Gavin said.
"I'm not afraid for my life. I fear for your soul, High Lord Prism. Orholm forgive you, for what you do this night is murder."
She pulled the low collar of her blouse aside to give Gavin a straight shot at her heart.
"End me now, Lord Prism. But someday, may you end it all, or be ended. Know that Orholm is just, and tremble."
Gavin stood and wet his lips. So dry. He blinked, approaching in a daze.
"Bless you, my daughter."
He looked the woman in the eye as he stabbed her in the heart, held those unangry eyes until the light went out of them. Then he pulled the bell string incorporated into the kneeler. Two Luxiats entered and caught the kneeling body before it could fall. The side door opened.
"Perfect time, High Lord Prism. There will be water and figs after the next room. Name's Delilah Tai, a subred."
And then he was in the next room. The woman at the kneeler couldn't have been more than 25 years old. She'd been weeping.
"My daughter, may the blessings of the light be upon you." She dissolved.
Gavin took his seat.
"I've come to shrive you, daughter, that you may walk clean and pure and unashamed in the light."
"I have a daughter, High Lord Prism. She's 3. Please tell me I'm not doing wrong by leaving her. I can't control the subred much longer, though. I know it. I shouldn't have used so much during the war. I should have been smarter."
"What's your daughter's name?"
"Essel."
"Essel will be taken care of, Delilah Tay. I'll see to it personally."
"We don't have any family, not since the war. I grew up next to one of the homes for orphans. Some of the Luxiats have good intentions, but tell me she'll not go there. High Lord, please, I don't deserve to ask anything of you, but—
I'll take care of her, I promise. The bell rang to let Gavin know he'd spent too long. She gulped nervously.
I've got more to say. I'm so sorry. I know you've got others waiting.
I'm here. I'm with you. Tell me what you have to say, Gavin said.
It was my idea, Garriston. My husband was a Red. He and I used to do a trick where he'd shoot a stream into the air, and I'd ignite it. We showed our commander, and he took the idea up like it was his. But it was mine. Bolos told me not to tell them about it, that it would be used for ill, but I did it. All those people. The whole city burning. They said 80,000 died in that city alone.
She dissolved then, incapable of speech. That wasn't your fault, Gavin wanted to say. It was mine. My brother's. We commanded such things. We knew. We knew, and we left the burden on people like you. The bell rang again, more insistently. In silent fury, Gavin reached out with blue Luxin and ripped the bell off the wall. He knelt across from Delilah and took her hands in his. Lord of Light, Orholam, God, see your humble servant. We pray you search us and know us. We pray your healing light would purify us of sins of commission and omission. In the fire of war we have done unspeakable things. The Luxiats may say our commanders bear the weight of those crimes, but, Orholam, Father, we feel that weight on our souls. We repent of our rage and our recklessness, of duties undone. Forgive your daughter, Orholam. Take her guilt and shame and let her walk with you forever. Gavin made his countenance glow softly as he spoke, superviolet and will and yellow triggering the cream's broken crystals, so it appeared he glowed with Orholam's light.
Delilah looked up at him with big, wet eyes full of wonder, but also full of peace.
He smiled at her until she shared his smile. He stabbed her heart. And his own went icy cold. He had kept his word to her, though. Gavin's mother helped him find a family to raise the child. Essel was a blackguard now. High Luxiat Jorvis opened the door.
Lord Prism, we're running behind. We'll have to put off your refreshment until—
No.
Very well. Your next penitent is waiting. Her name is—
No! And as soon as his voice was raised, Commander Anamar of the Blackguards was standing there, threatening. His attention and menace turned toward Gavin. Gavin would ruin him for that. It's not enough time, Gavin said.
There's no choice. The ceremony must be finished by dawn. We agreed—
Furious, Gavin walked down the hallway toward the revelers outside. Commander Anamar stepped in front of him, blocking the door. If you want to have the use of your knees ever again, Gavin said, you'll get on them now and get the hell out of my way. The man looked to High Luxiat Jorvis, then stepped aside. He didn't get on his knees. Gavin went out past him and took the steps up the podium two at a time. He sent two jets of fire into the afternoon air to get everyone's attention. He couldn't remember what words he'd summoned. Oratory had become second nature to him. Something about a momentous year and a heart-breaking one. Something about Orholam's heaven becoming richer at the price of those who would miss these drafters. Something about special circumstances requiring special action. Some false humility and misdirection. I, who serve as your prism, I covet the time I get with each penitent in Orholam's presence. These are the holiest moments I know, and for my sake I have asked Orholam that he not be too harsh a master with me. And Orholam is merciful. He has given me a special dispensation. I will meet with and shrive each penitent to be freed for as long as necessary, even if it takes 3 days. The parties here will continue at my own personal expense until we have honoured our dear drafters appropriately. A roar went up at that. 2 minutes to be shrived? After giving up your life for the satrapies? No one had liked it, not even the Luxiats who'd insisted on it. By claiming this special dispensation was for him and his own weakness, Gavin had come across as humble. Everyone knew, or would figure out in the next 2 days, that meeting for longer with each meant he'd just doubled his own burden, if not more. But if one is going to be a fraud, one ought to do it well. He jumped off the stage and headed back inside.
past agape managers and slave overseers and luxiats who had just seen the labours required of them also double, the logistical nightmare, the long hours they would have to put in so that Gavin would look good.
"Make it so," Gavin said. "I don't care how. Do it."
Inside, he walked past Commander Animar and toward the next room. He paused at the door and turned back to the frowning blackguard.
"Oh, Commander, I almost forgot."
Gavin had draped invisible superviolet in nets around the commander's legs as he'd walked down the hall, and now he shot green Luxin up and along those nets. The green Luxin wrapped around the commander's knees before he could react. Gavin clenched a fist and the green Luxin crushed both of the commander's knees. The commander dropped to the floor, admirably without crying out.
Dear O'Hollam, Gavin had been brash, but it had worked.
Now he would have thought through what friends the commander had, who would be offended, whether they would take vengeance, and in the time he would have taken, the window for such an action would have closed. Gavin had gotten away with a lot on brute charisma.
"Have your replacement report to me by the time I finish," he said.
But the dream didn't end there. He walked into the little room and shrived an Atashian green, Prayan Navayed, who confessed to cheating her employer, and to sloth in service, and to frequent defiance, and to beating the other slaves unnecessarily harshly. Then came Jale Rodres. She was a red. Lust. Pride. Wrath. Talia Blue. Wrath, envy, sabotaging her sister's marriage. Cordad Cruzan. A blue-green. Pride. Hatred of most of her family, hatred of her employer, hatred of even Orholam. Estefania Kamel, a red, bitterness and hatred. Naira Patel, a green. So close to white, she couldn't articulate anything. Belit Berains, a blue, pride. Billet Berains, her twin, a blue, pride. Even proud she'd outlasted her older twin, if only by a few minutes. Gavin didn't point out that since Belit had been born a few minutes earlier, her dying a bit earlier meant they were really about equal. Alondra Patel, a superviolet, so close to white she had to be held down. Arda Khan, envy, fear. She was a mess of tears, couldn't find her bravery no matter how Gavin tried to inspire her. The Luxiats had to hold her down. Mahnaz, a red, already confessed. Ameritet, a blue, already confessed. Pelagia Florens, heresy, since had renounced it, but still harboured it secretly. Isan the tailor, cheating her customers, claiming she'd used magic when she rarely did. Nigaro, spying on her employer, who'd been good to her. Ninkigal Day, green, already confessed. Yiska Thews, a green-yellow, one of the only drafters of Angari descent in the group, envy, pride, disbelief. And a short break for dinner. More prayers. Gavin didn't even hear them, didn't taste the food in his mouth, went back to work. Agnes, a green, had gotten roaring drunk during the ceremony and was too incoherent to confess. Gavin tried to cover all the bases in praying for her before he killed her. Fidelia Dor, a superviolet, claimed she had no sins, but did have a litany of destroyed relationships. Couldn't see, even with gentle prodding, that she was the common element in all of them. Lilith Ohwaria, a red-orange-yellow, had secretly tried to go white, admitted she couldn't figure out the problems. Mylita Ali, a red, a warrior who had been captured, her tongue ripped out by a squad of the blue-eyed demons who had served Dazen. She was illiterate, so Gavin had to use sign language and yes and no questions to shrive her. She seemed relieved. None of the Luxiats she'd visited before had thought of it or had time when she'd attempted to confess to them. Assholes. Gila the Mason, a sub-red, quiet woman, attacked Gavin when she thought his guard was down.
Please let me wake.
Elpida Bowyer, a yellow, confessed that she loved her children more than she loved Orholam, and meant it. She thought it a real sin. She had to encourage Gavin to kill her. Nukimut Rose, a blue, said nothing, eyes full of hatred, watched Gavin all the way. He expected her to attack, but she never did. Zanana Zanamus, a red, proudly filled every second of her time with him recounting her sins.
There was cruelty, shocking things with animals, torture, cannibalism, numerous murders, blasphemies, defamation of altars with luxiats she'd seduced, anything to sow chaos and horror. "And now," she said, "since I go to my death shrived, I'll join Orholam in paradise." She laughed. Tahirith, a yellow, had merely killed her husband, who habitually beat her. It was a relief after Zanana. Kariaka Kyraeus, a blue from a noble family, had joined Dazen's rebels and, when they lost, had bribed slavers to take all of her servants if only they would spare her. Had been looking for her slaves since to redeem them but ran out of time. Loida, a red, had participated in a small massacre in some Atashian village during the war. Didn't, on the other hand, feel guilty for spraying red Luxin into Garriston. Tsul, a sub-red. She confessed 1,000 small cruelties which she realized sprang from a life of hatred. She'd hated and envied multitudes, and though it had never reached any pinnacle of expression in violence or sabotage, she'd wasted all her years and talents. Said she'd sinned most against Orholam for wasting the gift he'd given her, life. Sarat Bibiana, a sub-red. She'd tried to go white and had been so heavily sedated that she couldn't confess. Shala Smith, a red, drunk and high on poppy, couldn't confess. Tazmitov, an orange. Lies, she confessed. Always lying and manipulating. Long ago she'd confessed to Alexiat for cheating on her husband, but still felt guilt for that, too. Edna, a blue, said she couldn't speak her sins, they were so black, not even to the prison. No prodding would move her. Ili Patel, a yellow, attacked Gavin, had hidden how much she'd gone white. Lemta, a red, white, was bound to the kneeler when Gavin got there, couldn't speak. Megichta, a blue, white, was bound, spoke but couldn't be understood. Tamayurt, a superviolet, too wounded from the war to speak, burn scars and seeping sores covering her body, but smiled at Gavin, fully aware, refusing the poppy, ready for release. Gavin had taken a full minute after that one, unable to go into the next room. Parvin, a red, a thief. Tamazalt, a blue. Another with a litany of sins, but so outlandish Gavin suspected she was lying, ill in the head. Dalciana Havid, a young sub-red, and an Atashian-born Hrothgari noble. She'd cheated on her husband with a young noblewoman named Irene Malagos. Information to be remembered. And the first time of the night Gavin had used his position for selfish ends. Tumment Taylor, a blue, simply said, "Envy, lust, hatred, greed, sloth. You've got lots to do tonight, so let's be efficient about this, shall we?" Tazaleit, blue. And Gavin discovered the real reason they'd anointed his body with oil. It made it easier to wipe your skin clean when someone coughed blood all over you. A quick rub at the wash basin that stood between each room and a quick change of ceremonial clothes that the Luxiats kept on hand, and he was on to the next room as if nothing had happened. Tinzin Khan. Tinzin Khan he could never remember. He'd even looked her up afterward. Tinzin Khan. Green. Of the floating city. Blood forest. In service to the satrap's steward. No memory of her. Something had broken in him when the Luxiats had washed the blood from his face and put him in new garments, as if it were commonplace. Had broken his very memory, of which he was so proud. And now, though he could call up their colours and stories and sins and attitudes if he tried, he saw each one of the drafters differently. He pushed them back, away. There became only a name and a sin to be shrived. Ely Alexander, gossip. Loida Moss, poisoner. Tinzin, rebellious. Talia, envy. Belle Sparrow, seductress. Lily Solanes, white. Xenia Delame, white. Myla Loros, white. Pelagia Breeze, spy. Megida Talor, hatred. Tahirith Khan, greed. Edna Wood, sloth. Tazmitov, lust. Was it possible for a woman dying a virgin to have lust be her principal sin? Yes, Gavin learned. But he soon settled back into the torpor. Jales Smith, incitement to murder. Nairi Many Waters, lust. Lemta, hatred.
But then even the sins were starting to sound the same.
My husband never understood me. If only I'd had as much as my neighbour. It wasn't fair that...
Gavin could paint on a face of full attention, empathy, the same stock phrases, the same words in the same prayers. He could sound so sincere, but he heard his own voice as from down a tunnel. Even with his excellent memory, the penitence became only a name and a single detail, as if it weren't worth the space to hold a sin for each unless it was a really good one. Titrit, a fatty. A part of him was horrified at himself. A fatty? No, she'd been... a blue, a pious and earnest woman. Fearful but resolute. Quavering voice that made her fat little jowls shake, and utterly, utterly boring. Ale Aribar tried to seduce him to escape. Wasn't even close to attractive enough to make it tempting.
Dianthe Knoll, perfect golden hair.
Tataya Cox, odd warts, all over, washed his hands twice afterwards. Ebe Ali, claimed 100 affairs, ugly as sin. Melita Melaines, big hands, big, big hands. Agata Mason, how did she get any work done with breasts that big? Layla Tree, the grimacer. Norit Hex, birthmark on her face. Beulah Blue, no eyebrows. Livna Smith, buck teeth. Nami kept clearing her throat. Or Holland's balls, would she never stop clearing her throat? Aura Orestes, seemed nice, grey hair, looked like a grandmother. Penina Diorens, a coward. Minu, a drunk. Acelia, white. Gilberta Gonzala, cursed more than any soldier or sailor he'd ever known. Neva, so skinny she must have some eating illness. Zenya, ugly. Sara Hesh, deserter. Billy Oak, stumpy. Khordad Ali, gorgeous, with a flat effect. Smelled of shit constantly due to what had been done to her when she'd been captured in the war. Titaya Brown, farmer. Elpida, smelled of fresh sex. Dianthe, something, weeper. Agnes, weeper. Ebe Brown, chatterer. Podage, odd name. Palvin Nisani, Gavin twisted his wrist when the knife hit a rib. Ada Gill, made a funny little eep when he stabbed her. Livna Elo, wet herself copiously as she died. Damn it, they were supposed to take them to the toilets a few minutes beforehand to avoid that. Nami Patel, vomited blood. Ora John, attacked, badly. Yiska, rambler. Ameritet Ali, amazing beauty, tried to seduce him. Gavin actually thought about it until he realized she was simply afraid and that she would do anything for a few more minutes of life. Even cheat on her husband as her last act, instead of going to Orholam clean. Issan, mediocre drafter, mediocre looks, mediocre sins. Ercelia, died proudly. Evie Black, nice name. Dulcina Dulciana. He didn't want to remember Dulcina, but he couldn't forget her. By the time he got to her, he'd been killing for almost 9 hours. The drafter in the room was standing, leaning at ease against the kneeler. She was only perhaps 16 years old, a dark-haired beauty with halos stretched to bursting with red and orange and yellow and green. She smiled at him, a full and innocent smile, neither seductive nor afraid, simply happy to see him. He was instantly smitten. "Greetings, daughter. May the light always shine upon you. Dulcina, if you would like to..." "Shh," she said, touching her lips with a finger. "I've already confessed." "Then would you like me to lead us in some prayers or songs?" She shook her head.
"My High Lord Prism, you've been doing Orholm's work all day, and will do so all night and through the morrow. Let me give you a gift, the only gift I have, the gift of my 5 minutes. You may speak, or we can be silent. You can free me first, if you prefer solitude, or at the end if you prefer company. As you will."
He didn't understand. There had to be some angle, some advantage. It was all she had. It was her last 5 minutes, whereas to him it would just be another grain in a full hourglass. There was no angle. There was no deceit in her open eyes.
he stared at her for 10 seconds, 30, and then he was furious for no reason he could understand. And then he broke, and he wept. And she held him, and they wept together. And after 5 minutes, the accursed bell jingled, and he stood, and he begged her forgiveness, and he kissed her lips. And he slew her. And with her died his faith in Orholam. It had survived war and abandonment and massacres and deceit, but it could not survive the holiest night of the year. It was midnight. He had killed 100 drafters. 327 to go. 30 hours later, Gavin killed the last man just before the sun rose. And he went to his chambers, and for the first time since he'd brought hell to earth, he drafted Black Luxin.